Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of the Football Per 90 podcast. This is a new football podcast geared towards discussing all things relevant to the footballing world, from the top five leagues in Europe to even more niche episodes into featuring smaller leagues and lesser known players. We're hoping this podcast will feature engaging and insightful talking points about tactics, data, and bringing on many more exciting different guests for future episodes. We have three of us as regular podcast contributors and features. Firstly, we have Alex Collings. If you want to say hi and introduce yourself, how are you, mate?
I'm good. It's good to be on. Alex, I work as a scout at AFRICON and done some features for Scouted. Happy to be here.
Definitely excited to have you on. Definitely excited for the very first episode. And next we have Aaron Moniz. Aaron, also, if you want to say hello and tell us a little bit about yourself too.
Hey, happy to be here. Yeah, my name's Aaron. I'm a university student in statistics and business in my home country of Canada. And as a data analyst and a huge football fan, I talk about data and football a lot, and mostly on Twitter, where you can find me at Amonese Football, talking about all kinds of stuff. Happy to be here, Mike.
Definitely. Glad to have you on. Glad to have you on as well. And finally, you have myself, Michael Nazarian. My work can also be found on Twitter at mnazarian10. I do a lot of work mainly talking about Chelsea, whether it's player or team analysis stuff. And I've also written quite a few pieces on just other Premier League player involved analytics and analysis pieces. So that being said, and without further ado, want to get into our first episode. We're going to be talking about three different clubs today. Specifically the management at those clubs, because it seems to be a very relevant and interesting talking point as of now. So we're going to be talking about Spurs, Manchester United, and PSG. And so starting off with Spurs, we know that they've just recently, a few weeks ago, appointed Antonio Conte as their manager. We know that they were interested in appointing Antonio Conte previously after sacking Jose Mourinho. And it didn't really work out. There was maybe a disconnect between the board and what Conte wanted. And so they went with Nuno Santo from the Wolves ex-coach. He's now been sacked after a disappointing run of games. And they've brought in Antonio Conte. And so, Aaron, I kind of want to come to you with the first question and see what you have thought about Conte and his first few games. Specifically, what we've seen and versus like what we were expecting.
Sure. Well, I mean, in terms of what you expect to see from a Conte team, I think we've already seen a lot of different elements of play that I'm sure we'll get into. They have already switched to the famous back three, and they look like they'll be sticking with it for a good portion of Conte's tenure already. But one thing we do come to expect with Conte is that his team seem to adopt his methods really quickly, and I think Spurs have had a little bit of trouble with that. Starting off with a draw against Everton and then a kind of a slip in the Conference League, and they came back to win against Leeds when it looked like they might drop even more points. So it's been interesting to see him kind of struggle and maybe show that the problems run a little bit deeper at Spurs and he'll need a little bit more time, but it already immediately looks like a Conte team and there's many signs of that.
No, yeah, I definitely agree. And I mean, being a Chelsea fan, like, I'm not so happy to see Conte back in the Premier League, not at Chelsea, because I personally loved him as a manager. I think he was quite exciting to watch. I think one of the interesting points is that I think, as you mentioned, the back three, there is definitely a defensive solidity around his teams. And I do think that sometimes as a result, it dubs him unfairly as a not expansive manager, where we do see actually... his team score quite a lot of goals. So they are definitely a fun attacking side in that sense, but obviously more transitional in nature than, you know, a possession-based expansive team. And so, Alex, I want to come to you then and ask you, based on the previous teams we've seen Conte at, how does him at Spurs from so far, you know, the few games he's had, how does it kind of align with what we've seen at the previous teams? How do you see that fit and what kind of overlaps do you notice there?
Yeah, just to build on what you were saying, Mikey, I think it's a good point about how good his sides are offensively that I think is often ignored. I mean, they were, what, second in the division in Serie A in terms of both goals conceded and, well, least goals conceded and goals scored. So yeah, I'm expecting that to come through eventually at Spurs, despite their initial struggles. But yeah, one thing I was expecting was actually them to play a 3-5-2 coming in, just given the sort of personnel that Spurs has, and how well Conte could get Son and Kane working together, almost like how he had Lautaro and Romelu at Inter. So that's one thing that surprised me a bit from what I was expecting. Does sort of make sense, I guess, having Mora keep a bit more space and a harder worker than I think Son and Kane both are or are capable of being, which is probably one of the first things Conte wants to sort of embed in the new team, especially after Nuno and Mourinho both, neither of them really did much pressing from the front or high defensive work until you get to about the halfway.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I don't remember which player it was. It might have been Ndombele or someone. Someone had said that the training session, the first training session they had with Conte, was like the hardest day.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It could have even been Reguilon. Who was it? Sorry.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Ndombele.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No. So although like you know, the defensive side is there. He does make you work very hard. And definitely there's this like energetic side to the way he transitions the ball. And I was watching the Leeds game, and I kind of want to go into a little bit from what I saw in the Leeds game. I thought the defensive shape was quite interesting. From what I saw like early on, it seemed to have been like a 5-4-1 type mid block, and they had Kane really leading the press. And oftentimes when the ball was pushed out wide, they would try to. Then close down those areas and try to win the ball back. But in the first half, it seemed like in possession they were really kind of struggling against Leeds' man marking. It seemed a little bit difficult for them to build up to bypass that press. And I think both of those things in the second half greatly improved. I think in the second half they came out with a much more energetic press, and that helped them. Create better transitions as they won the ball higher up the field, and when they were also forcing leads long and making mistakes by playing the ball out or something like something of the sort. And I think in possession as well, they made some adjustments where we saw in the Everton game this real deep drop of both the center backs and the pivot members to create really like spread. The pitch as much as they could. And we know that those combinations between the center backs, the pivots, and the two center midfielders and the wing backs is like really crucial. The use of the wing backs is like a big thing of these Conte systems. So I think when trying to combat Leeds' pressing, it was quite interesting to see them really drop a lot deeper, the two center midfielders, to create more space in the middle for one of the members of the front three to drop in. And that, when they made that adjustment, was a lot easier for them to start to play through Leeds' press. And I thought that was like a very interesting adjustment by Conte, and I think it played a big role, especially in their ability to score the first goal. And even create some dangerous chances from transition play as well.
It's
so
interesting you say that.
I do think there's a lot.
I know. I'm just saying it's interesting you say that, because that's also part of why I thought that they would be playing three in midfield, given the personnel they have there. I can understand why he probably has had problems with his 3-4-3 in not having that sort of progression and maybe most advanced midfielder that they do actually have at Spurs. But he can't really play when he's playing a 3-4-3. I mean, at Chelsea, he had someone like Cesc who could play really, really good balls and progress really, really well from deep. But yeah, if you look at Inter, they needed a bit more control in that midfield to be able to progress. So it's kind of interesting to hear that. I think that's kind of why he started dropping a forward in the second half.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, on that same token then, I wanted to ask then, what do we think or how do we think the squad kind of suits him, right? Like, I think there's a lot of interesting different kind of positional groups to talk about within the Spurs squad to see, because we know Conte's system is rigid in the sense that he likes very specific prototypical type players. And I do think in this Spurs squad there's a lot that suit him, maybe some that wouldn't traditionally suit him, but maybe he'll either make them adapt, or he'll look to the market to change them out for someone he does prefer. But I think there's quite a few players in the areas of midfield and defense specifically, from my point of view, that could we're not really sure who he's going to favor, but he could kind of use them all in different ways. Aaron, do you have any specific things you want to talk about, any specific players you want to highlight in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot there, and I think you, Mike, made a lot of good points about Conte's setup and possession. And firstly, the struggle to progress the ball is something I saw from their first Premier League game under Conte against Everton, where they had the back three, and then, you know, Alex mentioned that he had Fabregas or he had Nemanja Matic at Chelsea to play in that 3-4-3 alongside Conte and really be the midfielder who could drive the progression of the team from deep. And I don't really feel like he had that against Everton with Højbjerg and Skip in midfield, and I felt that they were really struggling to get through the gears and get out of defense. So I think you might see him try something like a 3-5-2 with someone like Ndombele. I don't know who the third central midfielder will be. I know Alex will be eager to talk about Pape Matosar, who's someone who I think could be... They signed him last summer from Metz, I believe, and I think he could be someone who figures a lot if he can prove to be a good fit in sort of a box-to-box, high-energy, contributions at both ends kind of role. I think Reguilon already looks like a staple at wingback. Kane and Son will probably be something they look to retain as long as possible, because even if they're not quite at their best right now, I don't think Spurs can realistically upgrade on those guys. Christian Romero is going to be someone who they're going to look to get on a permanent deal if they can, because he's going to be a revelation in a back three under Conte. I do think they might need some more reinforcements alongside him at center back. Joe Rodon's a player I like. I don't think he's featured that much so far under Conte, but Conte really does like to have a left-footed center back on the left of his back three. We've seen Ben Davies playing there. He's good at progressing the ball into midfield, but I'm not sure he's kind of that upper-end option if they really want to break into those Champions League places and challenge for trophies, which is what I'm sure Conte will want to do. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them look at kind of a left-footed center back. Who they target might depend on whether they get top four, but if they could get a left-sided center back, and then also maybe look at long-term replacements for Lloris in goal, that's probably where I'd look at Spurs strengthening in the future and maybe moving to a 3-5-2 formation as well.
And what about you, Alex? Is there any specific players you want to highlight that stand out to you in this Spurs squad?
Tell us about Sarr.
Okay, I'll get there. I think I agree a lot with what Aaron's touched on, especially I think there's so many different things he can do with the back three, with the center backs. I know he also tends to really like quite physically dominant center backs as a wide center back in a back three, and I think Spurs have got a couple of those. So I have very little idea of what he's going to settle on. I just am pretty sure Romero is going to be in there. All of the other guys, I think, have a good shot, and I think it could go into the market for a left-sided centre-back. As for replacing Lloris, I feel like that's almost something Conte would be planning to do, even if he had a longer contract. Specifically, you saw what he did with Handanovic in terms of how much he improved him on the ball, so he could have done that with Lloris as well, but I think his contract's up in the summer, am I right? I think it is, and I think they've got Golini there. Not particularly sure how good he is, but if Conte doesn't deem him good enough, they could be going in for someone like Onana, who I'm sure he was keen for back at Inter, hence their current intentions for Onana. But yeah, I think as we've said, the most interesting place is definitely the midfield. So first of all, I completely agree with Aaron on Ndombele. I think he is the midfielder that hasn't had the most taken out of him yet, but is probably the guy that Conte could get the most out of if he just gets him in a role that he's more protected by the two other midfielders in a midfield three. I don't think Ndombele is the sort of guy who's ever going to play in a Conte two midfield sort of system. But if you can get him in a midfield three protected by... I really like Skip. Højbjerg's also great. I would personally have Skip sitting deepest. Ndombele furthest forward. in a normal midfielder role, and then I would like Sarr on the left. Looking forward to next season. I mean, we'll see what they do, but I think that's a very, very balanced midfield. Especially Sarr's got a lot of running power. Actually, he sort of came through at Metz last season as being this box-to-box defensive like machine, but actually I remember watching him, and I remember him coming through. I think it was 2019 under 17 World Cup, and he was Senegal's like best attacking force. He was their center attacking mid, so I think he has got that in him. He can pretty much do it all. I think it's a great signing for them, and I do think it's someone Conte could like quite a lot.
Yeah, no, I've heard a lot of great things about Sars, particularly from the scouted guys, for sure. I know are quite big on him. Yeah, no, I definitely think there's a lot of interesting questions and things that we're yet to see in this Spurs side. Like, I also think, like, you know, we've mentioned all these guys, and we didn't even talk about Lo Celso or Dele Alli and where those guys might even fit in here. Like, I think one of the interesting things about the Spurs midfield too is the fact that they have so many members that can be part of the Conte too, but also maybe guys that can be, again, as you said, however they kind of slice it, right? If it's a 3-5-2, then it's a three midfield pairing, but sometimes they could maybe make it a 3-4-3 where one of the members of the front three drops deeper and acts as a midfielder. And I could definitely see that happening with someone like even Ndombele, if it's not an explicit 3-5-2 where he just kind of acts as one of the furthest forward midfielder in that system, or even Lo Celso, right? Like, I think what's really going to be important here is finding that kind of off-ball work rate that Conte likes to see as well, to keep that defensive and structured solidity. One of the other guys I think is super interesting is Emerson Royal, that I was wondering how Conte might use him, because he's quite a different fullback to what he came from, you know, using Hakimi in at Inter. And Hakimi, obviously, best you know wing back probably in the world. So, like, it's a step down, but in the sense of not really too much to the fault of Emerson Royal, just that Hakimi is just so good. But Emerson Royal is not typically a Hakimi type wing back, but he's been playing, and he's been selected so far. Conte seems to favor him, so we'll see how that continues to progress. Reguilón, as you mentioned, Aaron, I do believe also to be a staple into the team, and that Son and Kane partnership for sure. I love that you guys mentioned the back line, and this is kind of where I wanted to focus a little bit, particularly on Tanganga and Romero, because I think their numbers are quite interesting to what an Antonio Conte team might like. In terms of, I want to draw a parallel between Davies and Tanganga, where I always felt from the way I saw it, Tanganga maybe more was a center back than Davies for sure. That he actually like played in that position more naturally in a back two pairing. But Davies always felt like a defensive fullback that wasn't necessary, somewhere in between that of a left back and a center back, where I don't think he could do either role all too great, but potentially this wide center back role might suit him. And as you said, Aaron, it's important to have a left footer on that side. And so Davies could be the option. How high that ceiling is, I'm not really sure. But Tanganga for sure can be, I think, an option too, because he'd been used at right back and center back. And again, this right center back role, he's quite good on the ball. He has some pretty good passing and carrying figures for progression. His passing, progressive passes are 3.99, is 86th percentile against all center backs. And his carries are 4.28 per 90 as well, which is the 82nd percentile against, when compared with the rest of the center backs in the league. And so I do think that wide center back role, while I'm not all too sure how solid of a defensive player he is in the sense of like how elite he is or anything. But I definitely think he has a lot to offer potentially in that role, and the system can really maybe make up for some deficiencies he could have. And the last guy I want to talk about is Romero. You guys mentioned it that Conte loves his physical, kind of aggressive center backs, and I think he definitely has that with Romero. I mean, just looking at his defensive figures across the board, pressures per 90, 15.25, 98th percentile, tackles, 2.65 per 90, 96th percentile, interceptions, 98th percentile with 2.92 per 90, and aerials one as well, 94th percentile, 4.1. Like, this guy is just doing all of the work at a very high level of output. So I do think guys like Romero and Tanganga are guys that potentially could have a big future in this team. Or more so Romero, but Tanganga and Davies could have a big future in the team if they are able to adapt to those roles and fit that prototype.
I do wonder, though, if they're kind of lacking, I don't know if we separate centre-backs into dogs and cats. So dogs, sort of like what we look at with Romero, high action, lots of stuff. He's always going towards the ball, whereas a cat's someone more like, if I had to look, personally I want to say Saliba, but let's look at a Conte team, De Vrij, he's more sort of like going back and covering ground, looking after the defense, getting into the position. I'm just thinking through all of Spurs' center backs at the moment, and as I understand it, bar Rodon, I think they're all more in the Romero mold, not in terms of his ability or anything, but in terms of what they like to do. They like to jump towards the ball. I mean, you look at Davinson Sanchez, Tanganga is similar. Romero, obviously. Dier sort of could be seen more as a cat, but I don't think he's particularly good. So he sort of sits in the middle. I'm not sure what
yeah,
he...
Dier's an interesting...
Yeah.
Yeah, Dier's an interesting...
So yeah, that's actually an interesting thing I hadn't considered before, but I think they might actually have to go into the market. Unless he likes Rodon, I think Dier could also be someone to cover back a little bit more. But otherwise, in order to bring the best out of Romero... And I also think one thing that I think you touched on is also in terms of Romero's ability on the ball is going to be huge for Conte. Maybe the most important thing that he needs out of at least one of his centre-backs.
Yeah. And sorry, Aaron, you want to go on?
No, I was gonna touch on your next point about Conte's, about the wing-backs and the use of Emerson and Reguilon, because what you really kind of said with the centre-backs and the wing-backs and the midfielders is Spurs have a lot of young technical players who are really well suited to playing in a three at the back system. So someone like Romero, who's extremely aggressive and loves stepping out of his line, has much more freedom to do so in a back three and win the ball back for his team with the security of having two other more conservative center backs behind him. And then that also ties in with Alex's point about how they might want to go out and actually sign one of those players. And meanwhile, another thing that we've seen immediately with Conte is like the use of the wingbacks, with having that platform of three center backs and then a traditional midfield two or midfield three that you would see in a 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3. They essentially have an extra man behind the ball by introducing that third center back. And what that allows the wingbacks to do is completely burst forward. So in their transitions, Conte plays very aggressively in counterattacking and transitioning situations. And what I've seen immediately is Spurs rarely pass back in transition. They're constantly looking forward. And then the front three, the wingbacks are aggressively moving forward to join the front three and become options. And Reguilon scored against Leeds. I know it was a set piece, but Reguilon and Emerson have been really aggressively hitting the final third and been getting on the end of balls. And even when Spurs try to gravitate teams to one side in possession, they show up on the other side of the back post. It's interesting to see more of how Emerson kind of adapts to that role, but Reguilon has always been one of the most aggressive fullbacks in terms of how the pace and the burst at which he hits the final third and the timing. He's really good at becoming an outlet in attack with how he times his runs and how quickly he can get there. So I think, and then in a number 8 and number 10, like you said, with players like Ali and Lo Celso, have probably played the best football of their careers in some kind of a number 10 role. They can potentially be an option in a 3-5-2 midfield three, or also in a front three in a 3-4-3. And it's interesting to see how maybe Conte goes about fitting players like that in. But I don't think he's short of options. Like, looking outside the sort of conservative center back and maybe a left footed center back, and Lloris's contract, which I checked, it does expire in the summer. I think he has a strong squad to go for challenging for Champions League qualification, and a young squad that's going to keep growing, like as he keeps going.
No, I definitely agree. And I think a lot of that stuff we'll see and learn more as the season kind of progresses, to see, like, you know, if these staples that are in his team currently will remain that way, right? Like, if he's going to dip into the market. I know we have January coming up, but January might not be the best indicator of that, right? So, but kind of on that same token then, what are our expectations for this season? How do we see Conte performing this season, and Spurs, where do we think Spurs will place, and even beyond that, how do we see Conte in the following season. Do we think that this Spurs team might really be a threat to the Premier League title now with all these other teams really competing? You know, so what do we think, Aaron? If you want to touch on that a bit.
Sure. Yeah. We'll get on to Manchester United in a bit, but right now they're not at their best. And with that said, I think Spurs are the fourth best squad in the league if you don't count United. So I think they'll have quiet ambitions of reaching the top four. West Ham look great right now, but I don't think they necessarily have the stamina to continue at the current pace through the season. Arsenal could be in the conversation, but I don't think they're definitively in it yet. And that leaves room for a team that should get better quickly to push for that top four spot. But I think they'll be happy with anything in the top six that gets them back into the Europa League. As for the Conference League, I've heard a lot of opinions that they should kind of throw it away, but I don't really agree. I think competitions like that are a great opportunity to figure out how players fit into your tactical setups, and also to kind of develop young players and get them into the team. We saw with United players like Mason Greenwood, who got into the first team by playing the Europa League group stages. And Spurs are so financially dominant in that competition that they can basically use it as a point of development while still winning matches and progressing through. So I'd expect them to be favorites for that as well if they have the same beliefs as me with regards to how they should treat that competition.
No, that makes sense. So what about you, Alex? What do you think? What are your expectations for Conte for the current season and beyond?
So I think, I agree that quick improvement is one of those things that you expect from a Conte side. I don't think we're not seeing that yet. I think it takes him a couple of games to sort of work out what he wants to do, and then the improvement comes quickly. So I still do think with the quality that they have, he'll start improving pretty rapidly at some point. And I agree that they'd have thereabouts the fourth best team in the league. The one thing that is interesting to me, though, is that they are in a win-now cycle. If you look at the age of their stars, like Son and Kane, both late 20s, they've got a younger side otherwise, but those two are pretty much the most important and the biggest sort of guys that they can have towards going for some charge at silverware. And also alongside the 18th-month contract, like, it sort of speaks to pushing now. It'd be interesting to see what they do in January. Having said that, I don't think Conte will go even if they come 7th or 8th below the top 6. I think that's obviously Levy's expectation, but they've pretty much got a manager they wouldn't have expected to be able to get at this point. So I think he has the season to sort of work it out. Also, an interesting comment he made the other day is about how he wants to actually, his whole thing about like suffering and working with the team, how he speaks about this is like the first side that he's not expected to win with immediately, and that it's going to be a process that makes the ultimate victory in his mind more beautiful. So I think that does point to some sort of discussion with Levy in the background that he's actually, despite only signing for 18 months, it's a longer term project for him to build something there, which I think is interesting compared to the win now sort of thing that you've seen of him at Chelsea, at Inter.
And I really like that you mentioned moving on from Conte, because the next team we're about to talk about had to do the same exact thing, actually. So we're going to go on to Manchester United, who had to move on from Antonio Conte after he was appointed at Spurs for their managerial appointment. So we know at Manchester United that, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been sacked after, I think, 3 years now, right? It was 3 years that he'd been at the club. They've had what was, mixed views in the fan base, but a lot of people were very happy with the business. I would say that they've had good business on one hand and maybe not so good business on another. It's been a little mixed bag of things of that sort, but they do objectively have a squad full of talent, probably the most talented squad they've had in a while, and there were definitely a lot greater expectations than they've performed so far with. So I kind of want to first touch on, although it's been a week or so since Solskjaer has been sacked, I want to touch on firstly, Aaron, going to you, obviously, because I know this is your favorite and most exciting point of discussion. What went wrong under Solskjaer? What did you see this season that well, you've seen maybe throughout the years that Solskjaer maybe wasn't able to execute too well on, and what was new maybe? What really changed where there was such a dramatic drop-off, although the squad's talent level did increase? If you want to touch further on that, I'd love to hear your opinion on it.
Yeah, sure. I'll try to be brief because a lot of things went wrong in the weeks before he got sacked. But overall, Solskjaer probably did a pretty good job compared to other United managers post-Ferguson. I know that's a pretty low bar, but he rebuilt the squad. If you look at United's team now, it's awesome. And I do believe that Solskjaer's decision-making and influence was part of the reason for that, because United's board aren't known for making good decisions for the most part. And in the last few years, they have made a fair few. But ultimately, on the pitch, he got them back to the top four, but then kind of plateaued there. So their non-penalty expected goal difference, which is a good way of kind of measuring the long-term performance of teams, has dropped off every single season under Solskjaer. So in his interim spell in 18-19, they were averaging 0.55 per 90, which was third in the league. Then in his first two full permanent seasons, they were fourth in the league with 0.52 in 19-20 and 0.42 in 2021. And then this season, they completely fell off and fell to negative 0.12 goal difference expected per 90, which was 10th in the league and would not have been enough to help Solskjaer keep his job. Like, that level of performance with the squad he has is now inexcusable. And I think ultimately the reason for that was because he got to a point where he couldn't actually figure out how to get all the stars that he acquired into a team and rotate them through a setup. And the main culprit as a result being the defensive issues. United are conceding more and better chances than pretty much they have in the Premier League era this season. Expected to give up about 1.5 goals per 90, which is inexcusable. Their settled defense has been giving up opportunities that are like counterattacks, basically. So their PPDA, which is passes per defensive action, looks at measuring the how high and how effectively, basically, teams press. It's been dropping off throughout Solskjaer's tenure as more, maybe his type, hardworking young players have been replaced with sort of more established stars. And this season fell off a cliff, despite them pressing higher than ever before. A good example being Liverpool's first goal in the 5-0, where, you know, there was just this individual pressing chain of players who overcommitted. And then one by one, Liverpool tore United's defense apart, basically effortlessly, because the press wasn't there. Ultimately, if you're conceding goals like that and conceding chances like that, you're not going to be in a job for long, even if you manage a mid-table team, let alone a top-level team. So that's why Solskjaer had to go. And now it's important to kind of recognize that he did a good job in certain aspects and look at how that good job can contribute to a new manager, really.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I've always felt kind of confused. And there were periods of this as a Chelsea fan, right? Like when Lampard was in charge, there were some times where it just didn't really seem like a clear, actionable or intricate level system in place or instilled, that like sometimes it just felt like you're not exactly sure how they're going to approach things, you know? And particularly I saw that personally, like in build-up phases and as you mentioned, the defensive phases. So now we've seen with new information coming out that Ralf Rangnick actually has been appointed the new interim manager for Manchester United. And he's someone that I think historically from his teams definitely has much more of a clear and defined system. His current situation seems to be that he's going to take over for the rest of the season and then going to take more of a consultancy board-like role somewhere in the more back-end management of stuff. And then they're going to appoint a more permanent manager, which we'll get onto later in the topic. So now with Rangnick being the interim manager, what do we think of him as an interim appointment, and how do you like the appointment itself in terms of what he might bring to United from a systemic standpoint? Aaron, if you also want to talk about that briefly.
Yeah, sure. So I've been doing a lot of research on Rangnick this week. I'm not the biggest expert. I've seen many of his disciples, because he's one of the most influential men in German football. So for those of you who don't know, guys like Thomas Tuchel, Julian Nagelsmann, Ralf Hasenhüttl, who's currently at Southampton, as well as a number of others, have been inspired and Well, Klopp actually isn't a Rangnick disciple, but they are huge admirers of each other. And these guys are all managing at the top level of football, and they all play with a principle of what we call gegenpressing. And that's been the most overused term in football this week. So to give you a background of what gegenpressing is, essentially it's German for what we call counterpressing, which is when you lose the ball, you press immediately to win it back instead of dropping back to defend. And Rangnick's teams are extremely aggressive in how they counterpress and extremely direct when they win the ball to take advantage of that. So he believes that about 75% of goals are scored within 10 seconds of winning the ball, and most ball regains are made within 8 seconds of losing the ball. And his teams play like that. They're extremely aggressive out of possession and then drop into a very disciplined shape and try to crowd other teams. I managed to catch a game where they beat Bayer Leverkusen during his spell as manager of Leipzig. And they were extremely disciplined, dropping into a deep and narrow block, and then aggressive at punishing players who made slight mistakes by crowding them and getting them out of possession. Then once they win the ball back, they're direct, in my opinion, almost to a detriment, going the other way. They love long balls directly into the feet of a target man striker, one that I don't feel United have, so that might be an issue. They love being extremely quick on the transition and playing in small corners and then switching it really quickly to the other side. Because they believe so strongly in their ability to and the value of counterpressing, sometimes they even kick the ball away from the center backs. And then because even if the strikers don't win it from going long, they can press and win the ball back and then have the ball on the other side of the pitch. That's basically the principles of Rangnick teams. I think United fans will like him. They'll like the kind of... He played a 4-4-2 at Leipzig, I think, or a 4-2-2-2. And I think United fans will like that from a superficial angle, looking like a Ferguson 4-4-2, even though they're very different. But I think they'll like that his teams are aggressive. They outrun their opposition. They're extremely direct when they win the ball. And with the players he has at United, I don't know if they'll be amazing, but I'm quite sure they should be fun. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, and as we know with Rangnick, he's actually not been managing recently. He's taken more of a professional role, as I mentioned, he's going to do at United. And Alex, I actually wanted to come to you to touch on that a little bit. How do you see his kind of role as a more... as a more back-end manager, director of football type positions, how do you see that benefiting United, and how has he done at Red Bull and Lokomotiv Moscow, I believe was the last team he was at? How do you think he's done in that kind of role and the kind of knock-on effects that could have for United to building a more expansive and exciting side for the future?
I think it's going to be massive for United, to be honest. I think that's one of the big problems they've sort of had. Sorry, my voice. Post Fergie is that there's been no real identity, as Aaron touched on earlier. Even the sort of recruitment was really, really weird until Solskjaer came in and sort of worked it out, right? He's got the squad to what is a solid squad now. But I think there's actually an identity. I think what you see now from most high-performing clubs, especially those performing above their means, for United, that's a scary thought considering how much money they actually have to invest in to projects. I think it's going to be massive for them. It's definitely going to influence whoever comes in after Rangnick's done with his half season managing the team. Probably someone who is at least plays a high pressing game, if not a direct like disciple of Rangnick himself. So yeah, I think it's scary for the rest of the league now. I think for a long time United have sort of just been messing around with their sort of recruitment strategy. I mean, if you even look the season, look at how many attackers they have in their squad compared to what Matic, Fred, and McTominay as their central midfield options. There's an obvious imbalance that comes from almost like this sort of Galactico sort of idea of what they want to bring in, when that's never really been a successful strategy in itself, and also never been the way United used to be run. They'd rather spend a lot on players that would definitely improve them, which I think had been lacking for a while. So yeah, it's a scary prospect for the rest of the league. I think more as him being in charge of the football club vision than whatever he's going to do over the next 6 months.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And my thoughts on it are kind of similar, just a similar mixture of what you and Aaron both described. Like, I think United recently has relied a lot on individual players and lacked maybe a clear identity. And I think this is a step in that right direction, especially if they're trying to kind of modernize their style of play. Not just, you know, having a manager with a system that he can instill, but one that has an emphasis on expansive play. And I think that'll be really good for United. Watching some of Ranić's previous teams, like, as Aaron, as you mentioned, there's definitely an emphasis on these pressing traps and the transition training. Like, those are two very immediately, like, anyone can watch these games and be like, oh, wow, they are really looking to just swarm players as soon as they're on the ball, especially in the midfield areas. And once they get on the ball, they are really looking to get up vertically, quickly, as much as possible. There are questions about how much this United team will currently fit that style. It's a little interesting, though, because he's an interim manager that maybe, depending on what the appointment, who the appointment is, will maybe fit his style, you know, long term, maybe less or more, depending on who that person is. So maybe the imbalance doesn't matter as much long term as it does short term. So that'll be something we... interesting that we'll see. But I think from a squad building perspective and kind of clearer vision for the club going forward, it's a really big benefit, as you said, Alex, to the club, because I think his involvement in this kind of role, he's clearly very experienced, and he's had huge impacts at the clubs he's been at. And it could allow him in both navigating the United corporate environment and putting together the squad and system for that modern expansive style of play, it could allow him to be much more involved in that sense. And I do think that's something to worry from other teams' perspectives. Just speaking a little bit about from what I saw from some of these games I watched, like I watched a couple games of, you know, when Leipzig was playing Bayern, and the other one was against Hertha Berlin. One, they lost 3-0 just to see like what went wrong, and one, they won 5-0. Like, I remember seeing like extremely direct, even on the goal kicks, straight to the target man, as you said, Aaron, and looking to play forward immediately, even from kickoff, right? Like, it wasn't even like they won the ball back and were trying to go quickly, you know? It was even in the buildup sometimes. And sometimes, like, what was really interesting for me to see is their press was so aggressive that it was like compromisingly aggressive sometimes. I remember seeing examples of their center backs like just sticking on to an attacker, dropping into the midfield, like Konate, I believe it was, aggressively dropping and sticking on to one of the forward line members of Bayern. No, you know, leaving a lot of space in behind, but they didn't care. It was all about that aggression in trying to get the ball back. And against Berlin, the opposite, Hertha Berlin, the opposite happened, right? Like, they were very quick and precise in their transition play. They're very good at exploiting the space in behind. And also, one of the things that really stuck out to me was, because they try to play so direct, their players, whether they're big or not, have to be really comfortable being isolated. And they're it must be a training thing, because I saw people like I saw like midfielders being swarmed by three or four players and easily able to like calmly navigate and lay off the ball to someone else who can then play direct again, right? Like, it was almost like this chain ladder of play that was super interesting. And I want to just touch on some of the numbers from that 2018-19 Leipzig side that he managed. So they were pretty much joint first, actually, for overperforming their expected goals against. So, you know, clearly they were doing a little bit better, and by a little bit better, I mean a decent amount better than they probably should have in terms of conceding goals. But they were also, on the same token, joint third for underperforming their expected goals, too. So there really is this, like, kind of high-risk, high-reward type style of play that, yeah, maybe it's not always... maybe it's not the most effective, like, drawn-out system, in the sense that it's not a Pep or a Klopp where it's just, like, so perfect in so many ways. But it's definitely quite fun, and it's definitely focused on attacking. And overall, they only got third place, really, because Dortmund that season just had an unreal finishing season. But yeah, I just thought a lot of those things, when it came to the way Ranić managed that style, would be is going to be really interesting and definitely a different change of pace from what we've seen currently at United. And so I wonder then, United played today against Chelsea. Aaron, did you see things that maybe were Ranić influences from the game today? Or do you think that was primarily kind of like he took a step back and Carrick really took over today? Because we did see a certain number seven not playing for in a pretty serious game where I would have expected him to play.
Yeah, I mean, I want to touch on some of the points you made first, actually, because some of them are really interesting. Looking at their defensive record in that season, so like you said, they finished third, but they actually, which was, I think, three places higher than Hasenhüttl had them the season before. And the XG actually said that they probably should have finished second. They were pretty much the bona fide best team in the league behind Bayern, who were absolutely amazing. And the defensive overperformance, they conceded somewhere in the 20s of goals, and they were actually the best defense in the Bundesliga in terms of goals against. So I don't know if the overperformance is a huge cause for concern, but their defense in terms of actual record ended up being pretty good in that season. The other thing is, I actually think a lot of United squad is really well suited to playing under Rangnick, and that's probably good because they should be looking to play a high... It looks like the managers they're looking at hiring are going to play a high press in the long term. And we'll get onto that in a bit, but players like Fred and Fernandes are extremely well suited to playing this aggressive pressing game and then being extremely direct when they win the ball, which, I mean, they need to be a bit coached in certain areas, but I think they'll be really good under Rangnick. And there's also other figures like players like Donny van de Beek, Jadon Sancho, Rashford and Greenwood, who are young and can be molded into hardworking players, basically, who carry out the roles of a high-pressing team both out of and in possession, even if some of maybe the older attackers might not be as involved. And then at the back, I think they have a number of players who are... United have a number of players who are really good on the ball and will be complemented well by Varane, who has just been added to add that kind of solidity as a sweeper behind the back line. And then we talked about how the keepers go really direct in build-up. Well, I think the biggest area of weakness for someone like Dean Henderson is his ability to play short and play in a short passing build-up game. So I think the ease of that on goalkeepers in his system will allow him to go long, where his kicking is actually really good. And as a sweeper keeper with pretty good reflexes, like, I don't think he's one of the best shot stoppers or sweepers in the league, but he's a pretty good all-rounder outside that short end distribution. So I think he'll be well suited to playing under Rangnick as well. We didn't see Henderson against Chelsea, which I wasn't sure about, but the system was like a 4-4-2 narrow. Either, I think you would describe it as a diamond with Fernandes as the 10 and then a 3 of Matic, Fred, and McTominay behind him. And I think it was sort of reminiscent of how Rangnick's teams dropped into a nice settled shape out of possession really quickly and then looked to press. United's press wasn't extremely effective in that Chelsea were still kind of dominating the game and getting through them, but it was good at showing Chelsea out wide and forcing them to really work for the chances that they were getting compared to previous weeks where United were just getting torn apart. I think Rangnick is immediately... I'm not sure about the Cristiano Ronaldo problem, because I think my kind of opinion on Ronaldo is pretty well documented in that I don't think that he's a net positive for the team, but he does score a crap ton of goals ultimately, and that ultimately means that you are likely to want to get him in the team if you can work around that. And I think you'll see a lot of different things tried to get him in certain games. I don't think he'll play every single minute of every game the way he did under Solskjaer, though, for example. I do think overall the pressing is going to have to be a lot better. They're going to have to be a lot quicker off their feet. The play in possession is going to have to be a lot better. Like, on United's right side, there's a bunch of black holes in possession. McTominay is mostly just a sideways and backwards player. Wan-Bissaka is mostly just a sideways and backwards player. And there's no progression up the right flank because of that. And Rangnick's going to immediately look to change that, I'm sure. I think he'll look to play Donny deeper, maybe. I think he might look to play someone like Diogo Dalot, even though I'm not sure about his quality. And even, like... I just think United need to be more front foot in their approach in general. I don't think they need to dominate every game, but playing the way they did, I know it got them a draw against Chelsea, but it's not going to get them results in the long term, even if it was better than what Solskjaer did. So I think Rangnick's going to really look to reinvent how they work as a unit, even if the settled shape in defense was sort of similar.
Yeah, to be right, fair, I mean...
Alex.
Yeah, go for it.
No, I was going to ask you to touch further on that if you wanted to.
No, I was just saying, to be fair, like, it isn't that Rangnick actually did coach that team. I think he probably had a role in picking it. So I do think that that's not really going to be a problem long term. And looking at the problems that United had against Chelsea today, the one thing, though, I do think will be a problem is I think Ronaldo's, maybe I think you've probably, because I know on Twitter you're always against Ronaldo, so maybe turning it down here, but I think he's actually going to be a massive problem in a Rangnick side, in that I don't know if Ronaldo's going to have the buy-in. I don't know if he has the physical ability still. I think he's in great shape, but we don't ever see him constantly pressing high. I don't know if he even can. I don't think he will buy in regardless. And I mean, while your point about him scoring a lot of goals is fair, it's also now, I think, about whether the team will score more goals with him in or out. Because I think one of the things that sort of goes over people's head about Ronaldo is that while he scores a lot, it's often to the detriment of how much the team scores, right? And he'll get lots of shots off and stuff, but it's not going to be from the best positions, right? And things will get funneled to him. I mean, I remember watching a couple of Juventus games, and people spoke about how he was Juventus' top scorer, but it was always the ball getting funneled to him in some way because of who he is, that ultimately isn't the best way to get a team scoring. And given how Rangnick's going to want to defend with high pressing, high intensity, he's going to be a complete net negative, like,
yeah,
big time defensively. So
Yeah,
I think it's an interesting problem from a more political look at things, and I wonder what Rangnick does there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Ronaldo leave at the end of the season, to be perfectly
honest.
Yeah,
I mean, I kind of said as a throwaway that I don't really think Ronaldo's a benefit to the team, when that's probably a huge statement. And that's mostly because I think he's going to have to find a way to fit Ronaldo in. But if we want to discuss the problems that he presents to the team, yeah, essentially, he does score a ton of goals, and he'll score X amount more than the next United player. But whether that X amount is worth, you know, being worse at pressing, which will make you concede more and score fewer goals, and also the fact that he's declined a lot as a dribbler and a creator. He doesn't really have the same agility on the ball that he had in his prime, which is what I think people are kind of missing. He doesn't really have basically any ability on the ball compared to guys like Pogba, Fernandes, Sancho, who are among the best in the world at having the ball at their feet. And him having the ball and funneling more of the play through him is an issue. And then on top of that, it's less of a problem in a strike partnership, but United don't really have, other than Edinson Cavani, who's not always fit, they don't really have a natural nine who stays on the last line, makes movements in behind, occupies the center backs. And Ronaldo isn't that either. He likes to drop deep and wide to receive the ball more and take it away from other players, kind of, which I think those are all going to be problems for United. And looking more at Rangnick's Leipzig side and his other teams, I'll use his Leipzig. They played Timo Werner and Yusuf Paulsen up front. And those are two of the most aggressive pressing forwards you can find. And Paulsen is extremely effective as a target man, receiving defeat, making himself an outlet, linking with other players. And Werner is one of the best players, I think, in the world right now in terms of stretching defenses horizontally and vertically. He is extremely fast and knows where to be to stretch an opposition defense. And Ronaldo doesn't have either or any of those qualities, which makes him a huge problem in teams that look to go direct to a striker or look to use the strikers a lot or look to defend from the front. So I personally don't think he's worth that compromise of, you know, he's going to score so many goals, you have to figure out a way to get him in at the cost of other elements of your team. I don't think he's worth that anymore. But I do think it's going to kind of be a requirement to fit him in at least some capacity. I think having him as a super sub, if you're behind a goal and you throw on Ronaldo, like, ultimately, that's incredible, right? He's amazing at buying goals randomly and amazing at being a secondary threat in the box, basically, when you already have a striker who's up there. So I think there are ways to use him, and buy-in is really another concern, where it's all about what he's going to be up for and how politically United are going to orchestrate dropping him from the team if that's something that needs to happen. Ultimately, I see him playing most games, and in that case, they have to figure out a way to work around it.
I know Mikey's gonna ask us to move on just now, but just to add one final sort of thought, sorry, is that I'm just interested. I agree, he's gonna be playing for this season. I'd be very impressed if he actually gets dropped as a regular starter this season, but I don't see it happening. Weirdly, I do think it's more of a chance that he moves on at the end of the season. But just in terms of buy-in, I think buy-in rather than buy-in, I think it'll be interesting. I think United have forwards who haven't really shown high pressing ability, but really do have that capacity. I mean, Cavani has shown and is 100%, but I think obviously his days are numbered, especially as having a part to play, a big part to play in the team. But I'd love to see what Rangnick can do with Rashford and with Greenwood, two players with a lot of physical potential to be able to carry out what they do. And I think they actually also have the quality to sort of play up front together.
Yeah.
I'd like to see
Rashford and
what
Greenwood.
Greenwood well I'd like to see what Greenwood can do as a nine. He obviously doesn't have the target man sort of thing about him that Rangnick likes from one of his players, but Rashford definitely has. I don't think he's a player who doesn't leverage his ability to get in behind as often as he should, but he's also not being
Yeah.
coached particularly well. I think Rangnick can sort of replicate what he did with Timo Werner with Rashford, to be honest. As for Greenwood, apart from lacking that target man sort of ability, I think he's quite technically assured that he can get the ball and keep it under closed spaces, and I think he's got a good ability. He's got a lot quicker than people actually realize, because he doesn't use his pace at the max as often as he should. And I think he could definitely play as a nine under Rangnick. I'd be interested to see how he develops.
Yeah, those are all
No,
good points. I know Michael wants to move on, but I just want to say really quickly, because you made me think of a good point, and it's that high pressing systems do not work right away. There's going to be some results that are going to be wild, and in order for this to work, because United are going to play a high press under the next manager based on the guys who are rumored, and for this to work, there needs to be complete buy-in for a number of months, and turning a blind eye to what I expect will be a couple of really bad freak results. And I hope United fans
Hopefully
don't.
against Arsenal next week, but
Maybe, but I mean, yeah, there's gonna have to be some patience with it because I think United will get better immediately than they were under Solskjaer, but they're not gonna suddenly perform like Tuchel had Chelsea with the way he's gonna want to press and play on the front foot.
let's let
No, I mean,
Mikey
listen,
take us
like
forward.
as much as I wanted to move on, I actually think they were very relevant points, and I do completely agree. I think there's a difference between doing pressing and being good at pressing, and this was something we discussed, together. I think Alex, you and I specifically were talking about that. And but on that same token, like we were mentioning, there hasn't really been as much an emphasis on that. So guys who do have such physical capacity, like Greenwood, like Rashford, even Sancho, right? Like he's a quick player that can really, if he gets his angles right, it's really just about like timing, anticipation, angles, like that stuff. If that stuff can even be coached and coordinated as a unit, just any bit, it makes United a significantly more dangerous team with the players they have to capitalize on transition opportunities they can create. And so, what you were talking about, Alex, like I think, not understanding, having to navigate that kind of political environment and seeing when, how they're going to balance a guy like Ronaldo in the team because they kind of have to play him because he's Ronaldo, but he also kind of doesn't fit the team. I think the appointment of Ranić was more than just bringing in someone with a new clear system. I do think it's kind of like potentially a symbol of trying to move to that side of things. And I think we'll see that confirmed or denied with the managerial appointment. And that's kind of what I want to move on to, the more longer term managerial appointment. I don't think for sure that they necessarily would have brought in a guy like Ranić to have him also take a higher role later on if they weren't trying to instill some sort of expansive style here. And that's going to only be complemented and further built on by whoever they appoint long term. And there's a few guys that have been discussed. I think there's one main guy that we all kind of know that's really been heavily linked. But I just wanted to kind of go through firstly who we think long term would kind of be the best fit for this new style that United might be trying to transition to as that long-term managerial appointment. We can kind of start with the more basic ones and then move to the one that has been linked most primarily. But Aaron, if you want to start us off on who you think are candidates for such a position.
Yeah, Michael's trying to be subtle, even though he said we're going to be talking about PSG later on. But so we'll get on to the guy who's currently managing PSG in a minute. But I think one option that they might choose over him, and part of the reason why he might have tried to walk, is because I think they might be looking at someone like Erik ten Hag from Ajax. With Rangnick in charge, the styles are a little bit different. He's not quite as much of a gegenpressing direct type coach, but they worked Rangnick, I believe, and then also who Rangnick has brought in as his assistant, Lars Kornetka, as well. They all worked with Ten Hag and Pep Guardiola at Bayern, and I think that connection is probably going to come back. I should actually credit Case, our friend of the pod, Case, for pointing that out to me. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then also, another option they might look at, I've heard, is Brendan Rodgers. He's brought Leicester quite a bit up the table. I'm less enthusiastic about that one. Zidane, he's kind of like, at risk of oversimplifying, like much, much better Solskjaer, in that he's like good at organizing a team of players, but doesn't really impose a consistent tactical style on the opposition the way someone like Pep, Klopp, Tuchel, or someone like Ten Hag would. And I think those are the main options. I might be missing someone.
No, I think that, and then, you know, that one dude at PSG. I forgot his name, but we'll get to him. But yeah, no,
Google
I think
it before we get to the next part, yeah.
No, I do think those are the main candidates. But obviously, as we know, the main guy in discussion is Pochettino, who's currently at PSG. Alex, if you want to kind of touch on Pochettino, what you think about him kind of generally and stuff, we can kind of discuss him and how he might even fit United, if you think he would fit that appointment long-term manager for United.
Sure. So first thing is, I do think he is someone that Rangnick would like potentially at United, given similarities in the principles they play by, which is a high pressing game, a lot based on transition as well, which hasn't really been something that Poch has been able to sort of achieve at PSG so far, which is sort of potentially why he's sort of keen to leave. He can't really get his principles across at, you know, the super team that is PSG with all of their stars. So yeah, I mean, at PSG so far, I think we've all sort of expected him, I mean, I certainly did when he joined, to really take PSG up a level, even though, I mean, they had Tuchel before and they had Emery before that, so they've had tactically astute managers. It was all about an ability to get more out of them. I think Tuchel did really well with them. I know he caught a lot of slack with them, but I was still expecting Poch to take a step up, and that hasn't really happened. Partly because he can't get a pressing game out of, you know, forwards with the likes of Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar. So, yeah.
Yeah, and Aaron, would you be happy with the appointment of Pochettino, or do you think there's someone else that might kind of stick out to you as a more clear kind of path forward?
I'd be reasonably happy with Pochettino. I think I would prefer someone like Ten Hag, but I would say Pochettino is a good coach to develop the younger talent at United and focus on really shifting towards that and having them led by sort of key stars. Where I'm concerned about Pochettino is that I think his system, not unlike Rangnick really, needs complete buy-in and needs a full commitment to pressing. So I caught Pochettino's Spurs playing Chelsea. I think it was his first season where Kane was first breaking out, and they beat Chelsea 5-3. I rewatched that game a while ago, and they were, like, a lot of their players weren't even technically up to the standard, but they absolutely ran Chelsea off the park, and that was the Chelsea team that won the title under Mourinho, and they ran them off the park and outworked them at every turn, and ultimately overwhelm them that way. And I think in a way that represents what Poch Ball is supposed to be more than his PSG team so far. But, you know, with players like Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe, he kind of hasn't really... Like, I don't think it's reasonable to expect him to coach that level of high press, high transition game with players who are maybe a little bit older and slower and can't really run as much. But I do think it's his responsibility as manager of PSG to kind of adapt that. And I think there were signs of adaptation in the game against Man City earlier this week. But by and large, what I've seen of Poch's PSG, they're trying to press high and getting folded and getting bypassed, which will be a huge problem when United's board, whom I don't trust at all, interfere and go, you know, you have to play Ronaldo and have a complete buy-in high press. And I think like we've talked about Ronaldo, I don't think it's completely impossible to have a competitive team with Ronaldo in it. But I don't think Pochettino is the guy who I choose to do that if that's who they're going to persist with. So basically, if United are going to get Pochettino, I want to see complete buy-in to what Pochettino believes. And I think Rangnick will be able to support that. But having a recruitment structure and few as possible player politics as to who gets to be on the pitch, to really reinforce Pochettino's style, and then persisting with it until the results are basically persisting through the initial months of the high press not being what is necessarily intended, and persisting through that until you get to a point of actual good results.
Yeah, I think thing...
I definitely... Oh, sorry, go on, Alex. Go ahead.
You're the host, go for it.
No, I was just going to talk a little bit about Pochettino and touch on that. That unfortunate 5-3 game that Chelsea played Spurs in, because I do remember that game quite vividly because it was the first I'd saw of Harry Kane. And I was like, I remember before the game, one of my friends who was a Spurs fan was talking about how they have Harry Kane and they're going to beat us. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Like, no one had really heard about this guy, new kid on the block type thing. And he scored 2 goals against us. And I was like, wow, wait, this guy's actually kind of good. Hold on.
He was phenomenal in that game, by the way.
Yeah,
wow.
He was really good in that game. I did not enjoy it. But yeah, Alex, go on what you were saying. Sorry.
I was just saying, I know this actually links to what we spoke about, I think, a week ago or so, Mikey, with regards to pressing and pressing well, which you touched on earlier. And I think something we have seen in PSG is that guys like Neymar have pressed more. But it's not necessarily good pressing, right? It's which is going to be an issue with people like Ronaldo. I think particularly with younger players, you can kind of teach them to press better. You know, put in more effort, but put in more effort intelligently, which you don't generally get from... Maybe I'm doing Ronaldo a disservice because obviously he's still got more physically to him than Neymar does. But yeah, I don't see Poch being able to do that with Ronaldo at all, even if he gets more effort out of him. The one thing is, though, is that I'm actually not so sure that Poch coming in next season, Ronaldo will be there. Rangnick's appointment is significant to me in that it's a very bold move in terms of handing the operations of the club to someone who has a very clear image of what he wants, over and above the players who are there, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm skeptical they're actually handing it over to him, but I pretty much agree with that. In that, I think, especially if they miss top four, I think Ronaldo will want out. But in general, I think I agree with the point that it's easier to coach younger players because it's more a matter of understanding what to do and then also having the fitness to do it. I don't think it's a stretch to say Ronaldo can't run like that anymore. Like, he's, I think, the second lowest forward in the league for distance coverage over the last few years, other than Romelu Lukaku. So it's, and he definitely seems like the type who would be super like passion, effort, like run 1,000 miles a game if he could. And I just think he has physical limitations that don't allow him to do that anymore. So he's preserving himself to succeed over bursts. So I think I agree with Alex on that.
Yeah. And we've touched quite a bit already on PSG, but I want to move on to talking about PSG a little bit more in detail. And we've discussed obviously already that we don't believe PSG's been performing as well as probably expectations were, given how much star power is in the side. We definitely, I think a lot of people were expecting PSG to be a little more impressive in their showings. And I mean, not just are they unimpressive, they might be like, you know, most unimpressive this PSG side has been in a few years, even under guys like Tuchel or Emery, where they didn't even have Messi in the side. And so I kind of want to stick with you, Alex, actually, on this, specifically discussing the PSG squad and whether we think this suits Pochettino. Because, I mean, from my personal experience in watching PSG, one of the things that stands out to me when we were discussing is you mentioned Poch's principles of play. And what you mentioned is what I've seen. I've seen his Spurs side for years against Chelsea, against many other teams, just in general. I had a completely different vision and view from what we've seen in this current PSG side. It almost seems like they're not even playing Poch's style of play. And is that a result of Pochettino, you know, changing up his style, or is it a result of the squad not being able to fit his style of play? And do you want to touch further on what that means?
So I think it might be helpful to sort of differentiate how Poch's PSG have played compared to how Tuchel's did. And I think both are high-pressing coaches. Both still did try employ maybe not as high presses as they want, so tried in the past and with regards to Tuchel and is currently struggling to do so with regards to Poch. But I think they're quite different in possession, which I still do think is very much Poch ball. It's much more direct and it's much more transition-based, whereas Tuchel was far more sort of controlled possession, building up and then scoring, right? So, yeah, if we speak out of possession, I think it's safe to say that Tuchel did manage to employ a much better press than I think Poch has managed. And I think part of that is that he didn't have Messi to also add into the equation of now how do you get these players out of possession to try win the ball back. I mean, essentially, we've got Poch trying to play with seven players. I mean, if you look at... When I watched the Man City match, I didn't see much from any of those three, and it makes it so much more difficult for the rest of the guys. Whereas with Tuchel, it was a bit easy. He had Di Maria, who puts in massive shifts every game. And he had better control, I think, just pushing a little bit further back, whereas Poch likes to push quite high. In terms of possession, I also don't think it suits Poch's play because he likes really, really direct football, which suits Mbappe, but it doesn't suit a whole lot of his other guys, particularly guys like Neymar. It's partly why Neymar struggles so much more under Poch than he did under Tuchel, is that Neymar just doesn't have that physical capacity to go from one side of the pitch to the other side of the pitch so quickly. So he's always so far from goal now, whereas Tuchel would build it up a bit more closely, which would get Neymar into good positions where he could be creative. That's not how Poch ball works. So, yeah, I think there are criticisms there in terms of how he hasn't actually been able to adapt to the team. But I still do think we're seeing Poch try to implement. I mean, for example, when Verratti plays, it's a very weird thing where you kind of see Verratti kind of playing attacking mid under Poch. And the main reason for that is because Verratti can actually lead a press pretty well out of possession. So, but it's not necessarily for the best of the side. But now you've got Verratti leading a press rather than their striker or their wings. Which it's a weird sort of scenario, which is why I think Poch obviously is really, really trying to mangle things to be able to lead his team to follow how he wants to play. But I think at this point it's disappointing that he's not tried to change himself, his game, a little bit more to the squad that he has available to him, even if it is a difficult squad. I don't think this reflects necessarily on the quality of Poch as a coach, but it does reflect on how flexible he is and tactically flexible he is.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to add to that by saying it. Poch's Spurs kind of began to fall apart and unravel at the end, around the same time their pressing declined. So a lot of the reason why Poch ended up, basically why Poch left, was because he tried to kind of continue playing that high pressing system and they just weren't pressing as effectively as before, and that's when the team kind of fell apart. So they're to use PPDA again, use this with caution because it measures both how high you press and how well you press. But their PPDA declined from you know, around 6.5 to 7.5 in his first few seasons, to 9.4 when he kind of adjusted to make that Champions League run in 18-19, and then to 11, which was roughly 11th in the Premier League after they were in the top three throughout his whole tenure. Before he was
signed. Sorry, Aaron, when you say decline, when you say decline, you mean number goes up means the number.
Yeah, so PPDA is passes per defensive action. So when your PPDA increases, that means that you're allowing more passes per defensive action.
Yeah,
okay.
So your pressing has declined. Whether in quantity or quality, we can't say, but it's declined, right?
And I think it's relevant. PSG, I think it's relevant. Yeah, it's relevant in terms of, even though it does test both highness of the press and quality, I think with Poch, what we've seen is that he's always going to try with a very, very high press. I think it's one of the very, probably the most core thing to his game. So, yeah, I think the way it fell off there isn't indicative of him trying to drop deep or anything either. It's just the functioning of the press, which obviously had to do with guys like Eriksen and Kane losing their, and even Dele Alli losing their physical capacity a bit. But, yeah.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I'll continue that by saying his PPDA has gone up again at PSG. So in his first kind of half season at PSG, they were at 7.41, and now they're at 9.41. And I think for the most part, from what I've seen, they have been pressing really high in both seasons. And I would say that they've been getting kind of beaten in transition in both seasons, but this just shows that they're also having much less success in the press now as well. And I would say that against City, we finally saw signs of, like, Poch kind of easing on the press. I don't think they pressed City very high at all. And you could see out of possession, they kind of had, like, a 4-3, like, blah, like, up front, where it was just, like, they had four disciplined in the back four and then three disciplined holding-ish midfielders in Paredes, Gueye, and Herrera, where they just kind of didn't... They didn't really even cross the half line out of possession to press at all. They were just kind of staying in that block, and City kind of just walked over them the whole game. Like, I'll caveat that by saying City were insanely good. Like, they were unbelievable. But it just kind of shows that this, in my opinion, whether you blame Poch for it or not, I think the ceiling of a team that's constructed the way City is actually higher than the ceiling of this super team of kind of stars who play this slower, less aggressive style, because they're just going to be outrun. And then when City are on the ball, they still have the technical quality to deal damage. So I don't think PSG is optimally constructed as a squad for any manager, let alone Poch, even if there are other managers who can get more out of them.
And even saying that...
Yeah, no, I...
Go for it.
I was just going to add on to the kind of like the problems I've seen from watching PSG. Like, I kind of agree with that balance factor, right? There's issues both in attack and defense that I've seen. Like, you mentioned it there a little bit with Di Maria, Verratti, and then Messi. Those three playing together, there's been times I've seen where sometimes they could take up similar positions when all three of Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar are playing. Those Di Maria, Verratti, and Messi sometimes can kind of congest that right side of the pitch sometimes. And sometimes it can be... an issue in being able to get like an appropriate structure, both in their buildup and attacking fluidity. And I think it's just like something that needs to acclimate over time, because you do have all of these very talented players. You're just trying to get them to work. But I think one of the things that's really interesting, and this is obviously like very early on, right? Like that adjustment period still needs to happen, at least to really attain a high level. But when all three are on the field, their numbers are significantly worse. Granted, small sample size, but significantly worse than when than when only two of them or less are on the field, right? So goals for per 90 and goals against per 90, when all three of Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar have been on the field, have been 1.2. But with two or less, their goals per 90 was 2.2, so one goal more per 90, and their goals against per 90 was 0.7, so less than a goal per 90. So these are, again, small sample size, so do with that what you will, but so far it's clear, and it's been evident so far that it hasn't worked out all too well. And defensively, like we were talking about with Pochettino, like we're used to this aggressive pressing style that... It's kind of weird. They a lot of times, they line up in a 4-4-2 a lot of times where they just drop so deep, and their box defense... It's kind of crazy. We've seen it, we saw it in the City game recently. Some of these saves. I mean, the one against Mahrez, Hakimi, that last ditch header, that was going top corner inside the box from a very high percentage scoring position. Like they pull out some heroics for sure. There's no denying that. But it's not just the defense dropping so deep that it's their inability to kind of defend against teams or not play an aggressive pressing style. It's more the fact that they are constantly put under sustained pressure, and that structure then in possession still not being there is like a double negative that just hurts them even more. And that's the real thing. Like you talked about, Neymar's figures maybe have went up a little bit defensively. His tackles went from 0.83 per 90 to 1.33, and his interceptions per 90 have went from 0.45 to 0.8. Yes, these numbers have gone up, but there's a difference between these numbers going up and it being more effective. So I think that's where we're seeing both the kind of link between the offensive and defensive style of PSG that's really just feeding into this toxic cycle of their inability to be an effective team as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, I would so quickly, I would say when you're looking at those on-off numbers, you have to be kind of careful because there's a chance that, so when you look at the three versus the two of them, there's a chance that there are other changes to the team that are also affecting it. But in this case, I do think there's something in it. And it really comes down to basic math, right? You're looking at the Ronaldo problem, for example. When your team is less effective at pressing and is trying to play a high press, what that means is that your team is going to have less possession and less possession in the final third. And then on top of that, where that possession was previously being split between two key creators, you're now splitting it between three key creators. So all of their, or at least some to some extent, their overall usage has gone down. It's like if you have a pie and you try to cut it in half, and then you have a smaller pie and you try to cut it in three. Everyone's numbers are inevitably going to go down that way. So I don't even think it's clearly obvious that PSG are better with all three of them on the pitch than with two of them. I really don't think it is.
Well, from the eye test, it has been worse. Yeah. I think... Yeah. So
we don't even have to be the guys who say the stats are bad. So we can say that both, you know, eye test answer. Okay, good, good. We've taken a neutral standpoint here. But yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree. And kind of then... with all this in mind, PSG, I mean, it's not to paint this picture that they've been losing every game, because of course not. They're probably still going to run away with the league, as we all know. I mean, like, how could you not? And it'll probably get better. Go on, Ox.
Think partly is this gets exposed so much more in Europe because a lot of legal football is deep blocks, and also it's... they don't try to, you know, build up and break through the first line, which is obviously PSG's first line of pressing is awful now because none of them like pressing. So it's a little bit easier for them to get away with it. I mean, I watched the Bordeaux match and their center backs were always trying to ping it long to their forward, who would then offload it to Dilrosun, which kind of almost lets PSG off. I think obviously that match Messi wasn't playing, so it was a bit more functional. But they actually, if they'd had the quality just to pass it through to guys like Adli playing deeper, it would have exposed how bad that press is. So they do get off a little bit in terms of how teams play against PSG in the French league. But then obviously when you're going up against Leipzig and you're going up against City, who build up the way they do, they're going to get exposed. I mean, I think, as we've seen, I think if you see Mbappe, Messi, and... who's the other one? Neymar. If you see the three of them playing against sort of Monaco or even Lyon, it'll be far more difficult for them in the first phase of the arrival of the opposition's possession in their first press, which doesn't get exposed otherwise. So I do think it's almost lucky that they are in the league that they are in. Yeah.
No, and I think what you mentioned about Europe is an important point, though, because that's quite relevant to PSG, right? I mean, like, we know at the end of the day, the league has not been their goal. It's always been the inevitable... I mean, this goes for, I guess, a couple teams, City and PSG, but for them, like, the inevitable and always escaping, you know, Champions League that they want to really claim and win. But then on that idea, then, that although... they've been winning some games, if they're not accomplishing those goals, is there a scenario that Pochettino himself decides to leave, right? Like, is it that he decides that this is not the right fit for him? Because surely he recognizes that his team is not playing the way he likes it to, and maybe that it's just not the job suited for him. Because also with PSG comes a lot of baggage, right? Like, you have the board and stuff. You have these star power players. You need to kind of adhere to playing them. Not that it's all too dissimilar of a situation at United with someone like Ronaldo, but in the case that with that appointment with Ranić, and potentially a new path forward and turning a new page, it might be something that could be a match made in heaven, in that sense where they are really trying to transition that, and that whole, what you mentioned, Aaron, that buy-in occurs. Do we think that Pochettino might be compelled to leave if this continues to perpetuate throughout the rest of the season in terms of lackluster performances, although maybe, you know, coming away with the league and then falling out early on the Champions League slash even, you know, quarterfinal type exit?
No. I mean...
You don't think he...
No, I don't think he will. I think the rationale for him leaving was that he had another job lined up in the form of the United job, and when you don't want to walk from a job unless you have something else lined up for you. I mean, it doesn't make sense that he's not going to take... Like, obviously, if you walk, you don't get the same payout as if you're sacked.
At the end of the season, though. Walking away at the end of the season for the long-term appointment.
Well, he's still got a contract, right? And I think unless he has another job lined up, I don't see him really walking. I think he might get sacked if they get knocked out of the Champions League in unceremonious fashion, which I do think will happen because the way they're playing, last season they couldn't kind of block and transition their way to a Champions League title, and now they have even more issues, and... There's at least four or five teams who are way better than them right now. So
I think
he can get unceremoniously eliminated from the Champions League. And I do think there's a possibility they sack him if that's the case. But I don't necessarily see him walking before he lifts a league title and probably even gets another season if no one else wants to hire him.
Yeah, so I don't think...
Alex, I know you have
a unless it's point. Particularly unceremonious. Like, they get knocked out by some team like 6-0 or something. I don't think I see him leaving at all. I think the one thing about PSG is that they are a lot more patient than people give them credit for. And they'll stick by teams. They'll stick by their managers until they see that it's clearly not working, which Poch has now only been in for less than a year into the job. And remember, if we look back at his Spurs side, they didn't look good for the first year until it all sort of clicked together. So I don't think he's going to get sacked this season. I think he's pretty safe, to be honest, especially since he is running away with the league, which, I mean, I think it's a bit of a fugazi to say, because I don't think they're as good as their points are, their points suggest, but I think he's pretty safe. I do think that I could see him wanting to leave. I don't think I would have been surprised if the job had been offered to him by United now and he'd left. I think I would have been quite surprised. Because he has a title, and I think sort of, especially when that's been hanging over his head for so long, it's a big consideration to make. But if the United job, if they come for him at the end of the season, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him move to United. And look at all the players that they have there. Personally.
Well, then, I think that's a really interesting point then. So in the case that they are more patient and he does decide to stick around, like, do we think then, well, definitely for this season, I think is the most important seed. Do we think that this Messi, Neymar, Mbappe combination will continue to see it improve? To what extent? Do we think that it could reach the potential levels of the glamorous attack it might seem to be? Or it never really could get to that ceiling because of the off-ball issues they have and the balance within the team?
So,
what do you think, Alex?
Well, I think what he's sort of decided on now, and I think it might have been because of the City game, is that he needs Di Maria in the side. So now it's the front three is going to be more one of Messi or Neymar on the one side, probably Neymar with Messi probably as an attacking mid, and then Mbappe at center forward, which I don't think is his best position either, but I think that's sort of what he's decided he's going to be working with, which I do think is better. It sort of limits the pivot he can play, because now Paredes is maybe a little bit less useful than putting in like someone like Danilo next to Idrissa Gueye. So, yeah, I think that could be what we see going forward. I'm not totally sure on that yet, though. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't really see where they put it together for Tottenham was partly because he was coaching young, physically capable guys who all were buying in from the start, and then it clicked, right? I think now you've got, I mean, sure, I think that the bigger ego thing sort of gets overplayed, but none of Mbappe, Messi, or Neymar want to be the hardest working guy in the team. Mbappe especially can be, but he's also their best player at the moment. I think part of him wants to understand why he can't be the highest usage guy, and then the other ones sort of work for him, right? So I kind of never see it, that click happening, unless one of them gets dropped. I mean, Neymar picked up an injury today, and I wouldn't be surprised. It apparently could be 6-month ankle injury. I wouldn't be surprised if suddenly now the three of them, Di Maria, Messi, and Mbappe suddenly pick up form now that I'm thinking of it. But as a complete three, I don't think it's ever going to be Poch's cup of tea.
Well, that definitely makes Poch's job easier, though, if Neymar got injured. And honestly, that ankle injury, I don't know if it's the same ankle, but I saw it as well. I believe it was his left ankle. Like, he's had quite a few problems, and it's unfortunate to see a guy like Neymar, who relies on his kind of, like, agility especially and stuff, and being very nimble on his feet. But it did look like a bad injury, so we'll see where all that goes. Aaron, do you have anything you wanted to add kind of to that as well?
No, that's a good point. I mean, I hadn't actually brought up the stats, but Neymar hasn't played half the available minutes in the league at PSG since he joined. I think he's only completed 20 90s in one season of his 4 or 5 at PSG. So it's pretty inevitable that he's going to have time out. I know when they were on that run under Tuchel in the Champions League, Mbappe was the one providing the goals, and Neymar spent... There were a few matches there where he was injured and they had to get through. So I think if you can always have two of Mbappe, Neymar, and Messi on the pitch, and then you're working hard to have the third, that is an infinitely better scenario than having to fit all three of them and do a heavy pressing system. So yeah, I think Alex's point about them getting better is a really good one.
Yeah, no, and I think, I think Pochettino's found his solution. Just if he needs to balance the squad a little more, he can just make sure one of them gets injured, and problem solved, you know, less of a headache for him, because PSG board can't say anything to him then. But no, all jokes aside, on that note, I think that is all the time that we have for today. I want to say thank you so much to both Alex and Aaron. It was really a pleasure to speak with both of you guys today. I do also want to say, please be sure to follow us on all of our socials at FootballPer90. You can find us there on Twitter. And obviously, please don't forget to subscribe to the FootballPer90 channel. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a like. And we'd love to engage with you guys in the comments. We'd love feedback and also maybe some ideas on future episodes that you guys might have. So once again, thank you once again for all of that. And we'll be back next week with our next episode. Have a good one. Bye.
Cheers.